the 10th. The time is 7:40. I'm speaking with Mr. L.A. Sticks Nelson in Nashville, Georgia. Good evening, Mr. Nelson.
Good evening.
And thank you again for allowing me to come up to talk to you.
I'm glad for you to come. Have somebody to talk with.
That's all right. I'm glad to listen. Let's talk about turpentining. How did you get involved with turpentining?
Well, how did I get involved with it?
Yes, sir.
Well, my daddy and mama separated when I was a baby. And from time to time, they come along. People, you see, people used to didn't like trains and things run now. They used wood. There wasn't no coal and oil and electric and stuff like that. Wasn't none of that. They would already cut what they call 4-foot wood, load it on a boxcar, a flat car, and carry it to different places. When they get ready to go out with them trains, they'd vilifying that engine, fired up then, get it up a head of steam much as you want, get it in and carry on where it wants to go. Yeah, and then they would that way, anything to do, any kind of sawmilling, cutting the lumber and stuff, they would use wood. Wasn't no such thing as oil, stuff like that to make steam with. I was an old grown man before I see any such things as coals and things. When they throw the coal, the wood out, coals come in. When it got shattered, the coal, then the oil and electric come in.
When did you get your first job turpentining? How old were you?
I just turned thinking about. I was about 13 or 14 years old.
Who'd you go to work for?
Who'd I go to work for?
Yes, sir.
Well, the first man was into it was a man from here called H.M. Poole. But he went down that little place just on down below where you got your first information. It's called Fargo. And Edith. And that's where I got my first start in Tim time in the place called Edith. But we moving here, you know how we move?
How?
On a freight train. I was got a thing to load on the freight train that morning, right over here at Adel. Shared off. Now up in the evening light. The train come along from Atlanta, going to Jacksonville. And he picked us up and put us off in a little place called Edith, just across the river from Fargo. And when we got there, though, there was two horse wagons standing at you. Therefore, waiting on us. Done our things done there, and they done loaded and waiting until the passenger train come. And we moved on out, then about 2 miles from Edith. And that's where I seen my first Tarrytown. The first thing I done there is do what they call raking pines.
Raking pines?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
That's just like you take that, see that pine tree out there?
Yes, sir.
You take your hoe, put it on the handle. Go out there and cut all that grass from around the root of that tree about that wild. And that was to keep the fire from burning that tree. You know, then that's where we got started. I done that the first year. The next year, you started out, see, I had three things in the fall of the year to do. Rake pines, put up virgin, and raised tens.
What was putting up virgins?
Well, that was the starting of the phase of the tree, the way you could get gum out of it.
How did you do that?
See that tree out there?
Yes, sir.
You get about that high from the ground.
What, about 6 inches?
Yeah, 8 inches, something like that. package. The first started over, they cut all that sap down right up that high on the tree clean and tack a tin onto it.
A tin cup or a bucket?
A flat piece of tin about wide as three fingers. And just according to how big the tree was, and it hit reach anywhere from like that to like that. Flat, they nail it to that tree.
From about 6 inches to about a foot wide?
Yes, yeah, some
the
of them.
The tin
didn't ever get to be a foot wide.
How wide did it get to be?
Anywhere from about 4 inches.
Right.
About 4 inches wide that tin ever got. But then that's where they start over to cut it down then to about 2 inches. But they'd level that tree off about that high off the ground where that cup would fit on. And the cups was about that deep and about that long. They'd put it under that tin, put a nail under it to hold it up to that tin. That's the way they do it. And then when they got all the minutes they want to put up like that, they start back to put the coal cropping them out. Give every man so many thousand, that would be his crop. He'd go in there then, he'd cut a streak on this side of that tree, until I cut the other man, he'd make a point right in the middle of that face. And that gum would run out of that cut gas you cut into that cup. When that cup got full then, he'd come along with a bucket and a paddle. Take that paddle and run through that cup and get that gum out of there and put it in that bucket. And that's where the energy cat, the bucket would be about that high and about that big around. But now the bell, it is up about this high.
And about 3 feet high?
Huh?
About 3 feet high, the barrel?
Yeah, some of them about 4 feet high. And it's about... some of them about 3 or 4 feet round. Around. And then they had to put a hook in that bell to put a head on it. Where that gum wouldn't pull out when you turn it over. And you carry it on then. Let me see, can I? You made up serve, ain't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, it would wake off. Skim over just like syrup. Only that stuff you get over that gum, you throw it away if you want to either pile it out and somebody come on and buy it and make fire. Yeah.
After you did the virgin, mm-hmm. First you did the yearling, then the virgin, what was the next thing that you did?
Next thing after you leave virgin?
Yes, sir.
Come to yelling. After leave yelling, they come to pulling boxes.
Okay.
All on that same face.
What is pulling boxes?
That's when they get up like that a little bit higher. You do it the same way you do when you start at the bottom down there. But every year,
your way up the tree.
Yeah, every year it goes higher and higher. We'll have to get up so high then they quit. Then go back down to the ground. So the second year I was into it, come time to start the boy.
And you were 13 or 14 years old then?
When I started.
Yes, sir.
But when I stopped, I was about 75.
We got a lot of ground to cover.
I covered a lot of it.
Now, your first boss, what was his name?
Mother?
Your first boss.
Born.
Your first boss man?
Oh, man, Henry Poole.
Now, you lived in a camp?
Yeah. But, man, Henry Poole, he was from here.
He was from Nashville?
Yeah. And them Langdales you see on his fellows?
Yes, sir.
He was down there where Chris Fellows up here went on and him and him were border police. That's where I first started taking time down there. And then I went to here and yonder.
So Mr. Langdale and Mr. Poole were in business.
Yeah.
How did you get the job? Did you just walk up and ask for the job?
No.
How did that happen?
Did it?
Because you were just a little boy.
Well, I was with my stepdaddy.
What was his name?
Will Brown.
And they called him what?
Well, most people call him Neat in the Ways.
Hold on, Mr. T. I got to start with it. Hold on.
He had plenty of highs to him, but he didn't have much weight to him.
Yeah.
I know that why he called him Neat in the Ways.
Okay. Here we go.
Wait.
We're
going to go. In the Ways or Neat?
Neat.
Neat.
Yes, ma'am.
Neat.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Hold on, sir.
I worked you.
This is part two of the first segment of the interview with Mr. L.A. Sticks Nelson, turpentining. We're talking about how Mr. Nelson got that first job working for Mr. Poole and Mr. Langdale. Now, you were with your stepfather when you got that job?
Yeah, I worked under him, see. I worked under my stepdad until I was 21 years old.
What did he do in the camp?
Everything anybody else done. Chip, dip, pull, anything. See, he learned it right here. But
here in Nashville?
Right here in Nashville. He wasn't right here in Nashville. He's between me and Tifton. A company coming here. I don't forgot just exactly who that was.
But
he come in here and put him up a camp. Between me and Tifton, but it's right on the Tifton Road. I can tell you that what he said. He stood where he first landed. And from that on to the little place out there, then he moved right there, up there. And started building a bigger camp and a bigger quarter.
Yes, sir.
And called it Cottles.
Say it again?
Said he called it Cottles. Cottles Crossing. All right, he started ten-time camp and bought a big farm and all out there. He ten-time in farm. From time to time, then come a sawmill man in there and put up a big sawmill. Went to cutting the timber then, and they called it where he put up it, Reuben. He had bigger quarters than Pool did, and he called it Reuben.
Did you live in the same cabin that your stepfather lived in the camp?
Yeah.
What was life like in the camp?
In the camp, just like this town here. Just like people living here together.
Most black people, and most young white people who don't know any better, who don't know anything about a turpentine camp, would think that it would be almost like being a slave. That it would almost be like you had a job, but it was still like being on a plantation. Was it like that?
No, the white folks. There's too many people stay. White people stay in the camp with the colored folks. See, all them camp mostly would be white with colored folks.
Blacks and whites lived and worked together.
Just a very few white it worked it. See, did see it, but they didn't work it.
So the black people had the camp to themselves?
Yeah, most of them. But there'd be a white man or two in that camp, the man that owned the camp, and he had what he called a woodsman. And from time to time, the camp got me, he had what he called an overrider. That overrider was over everybody in the camp.
What was it like working with the overrider?
It's called what so many was.
Like most folk would call a straw boss.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's calling him what sort of man he was.
Mm-hmm.
If he was a good man, he was a good man to get along with. But some of them wanted to be kind of in poison and bigoted and wanted to beat you and hit yourself. But if you stood up for yourself, you didn't have no trouble.
What were some of the things that the black people did to have fun in the camp?
Oh, They had what they call a juke joint.
Yes, sir. What was it like going to the juke joint?
It was just like going to a cafe, some of your rough, frolicking cafes.
What kind of music would you listen to? If I was to walk in one of those juke joints, what kind of music would I hear? Who would I hear on the juke?
Well, now, him, you'd hear just what kind of music you hear now. But back long then, it was a guitar and a piano.
So there were men in the juke joint playing music live. There were men there actually playing the music, the piano, actually playing the guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
Y'all had a high old time, didn't you?
Yeah, they had a lot of... Well, and then they had a mean time.
Yes, sir. What was that like?
The devil. Yeah, man, they had some juke joints I didn't go to.
They were too rough, huh?
Yeah, then people want to do something, do things I didn't do.
Do you remember any of the musicians, the singers that might have come through the juke joints?
Any of the singers and playing the guitar?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
What were some of them's names?
Man right over there. He dead now, but he's still on that place there. It's Nasir Copeland. He had a brother. Now, they waited for a sawmill man when I knew them. And he was getting his logs out of Old Oak Farm. And they'd come, they wouldn't come in only once a week or once a month. And they'd come in. That man had, he had 30 or 40 houses. He had a big camp and business in the man I was with. You know, when he did come in, they sometimes they'd just stay in the camp. That man had a juke joint on his job.
So you didn't even have to leave the camp to go to his juke joint?
No, I didn't have to leave camp to go. But I hardly ever went to his juke joint because he had portables and things in there. And if you didn't do like these ones, they wanted to hit you. See, now I didn't play that.
They have what in the juke joint now?
Have a portables.
What was that? What would they do?
Well, it's just like you get in there, get drinking, unruly, on Ray Sand, he come in and talk to you, try to talk to you, and if you didn't hear him, he'd hit you.
And these were white men?
Yeah, he's a white man. See, now I didn't fool them kind of places.
Yes, sir.
Because he didn't hit me, and he didn't cuss me, mess with me, and I didn't do him that way.
You told me the last time I was here about the day that a man came to your father and asked your father if you could go to work for him.
Oh, well, that was, we done quit Tim time then. We was farming then.
Okay, I want to stay with that turpentine for a minute, but I'm going to come back to that. Let me ask you this. When you lived in the camp and you were down at Edith mm-hmm. at this time, mm-hmm. were you with your mother and your stepfather?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mom and daddy married when I was a little toddling baby, and they never parted. They separated by death.
What was it like for you being a teenager, a young man, a young colored man, mm-hmm. growing up in the turpentine camp? What did you do?
I done anything that anybody else done, anything I wanted to do. You see, you had your privilege.
I mean, did you play games with the other young boys, or
yeah.
had you grown up? Had you become too grown to play games with them?
No, I never come too grown to play games. Playing baseball?
Yes, sir.
I was a good baseball player.
Did any of the turpentine camps have teams?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, they'd have teams just like they have now, and they go from place to place like they do now.
From turpentine camp to turpentine camp.
And farmers have a big plantation, 15, 20 plows. They take that was a big camp, farm. And they'd go, they didn't let the niggas have but 3 days out of the year to play ball thing.
How come?
Well,
it was just that way.
Yes, that way. Oh, roughnecks, I call them now.
What'd you call them then?
Mr. So-and-so, we just wasn't there what his name was.
Because we had to.
Yeah, we had to do
that. There was no doubt about that.
They didn't allow us to come in the front door of the house, some of them.
Some of them still don't do that today.
Yeah, there's some of them don't like that today. You know. But, I'm talking about Danny coming to ask Dad about me staying with him.
Well, do you remember any of the names of the baseball teams that went from camp to camp, the name of your baseball team?
Yeah. Tom Creek plays right below where I lost down there. Where they want to, Wellington, live there. That was one of the places. Fargo was another one.
What position did you play?
Me?
Yes, sir.
Shortstop. Right field. I could do a little bit of any of it. But it's one thing I didn't like to do. I didn't like to your backstopper. They don't want that man chilling at me.
So that helped me in from one camp to know me in another camp. It helped y'all to get along better. You got to know each other playing ball.
No, you didn't have to know nobody else. You just going to play ball.
It wasn't necessarily something that you did to be friendly.
Huh?
It wasn't something that you did to be friendly.
Yeah, that's what it was for.
That's what it was for.
That's what it was for, friendly. You see, the 4th of July, them old big shot farmers would let these niggas off the 4th of July. They played ball the 20th of May.
What was the 20th of May?
Well, that was just a...
That was just a day.
Yeah, just a day kind of that the freedom nigga kind of. And that was his off day, the 20th of May and the 4th of July. You know.
What about Christmas?
That's what I'm going to say. Christmas Day, you had a week old.
What about Thanksgiving?
Well, that's what I'm trying to think. I know there's another day in it. Thanksgiving, 4th of July, and the 20th of May. Them 3 days that them big shot farmers and things could get together, them niggas could have all and play ball. But then I forgot in term time, every Saturday and Sunday you could play ball if you want to.
What made the difference?
Well, it's just different than the people.
Let me ask you this. What was it like 4th of July or May the 20th or Thanksgiving and Christmas in the camp for black people?
Well, it was all right. It's just a bunch of them get together and have fun.
Everybody had plenty to eat?
Yeah, they'd have big eat. That's what it's like. Now, mostly, that boss man would help them prepare a big dinner.
Help them how?
Yeah.
How would he help them?
Just get what you wanted to eat.
You had a commissary in the camp? You had a store?
Yeah.
In the camp?
In the camp, yeah.
That the man that owned the camp owned the store?
Owned the store, yeah.
He owned everything?
Yeah, he owned everything. But he would care most anything any other store cared, he cared it. And if he was a man, he'd go out when he done big dick and buy all kind of different stuff. Care then put in that store, sell them boys, pray for them to have that day.
Let me ask you this. You worked Monday through Friday.
Yeah. Some of them worked Saturday. It's called what sort of work you was and what sort of speed you had.
Did you go to church on Sunday?
Yeah.
What church? What were some of the churches that you went to? Where were they?
Yeah, right down the corridor most all the time. And if it was some of any kind of church you got now, was round on them quarters.
How when you say quarters, how big is it? How many acres are we talking about?
Oh, well, now that's called how many families was there.
How many families were in your camp? Do you remember?
No, not all together. Some camps, huh? You take Camp Man like the Langley on the Velo?
Yes, sir.
They had anywhere from about 15 to 30 people in different camps. And it's on my mind, what sort of shape your boss name was in, how he was.
What was life like for little children in the camp? What did they do? They run around all day, or did they go to school?
Oh yeah, they went to school.
How would they have a school?
How they have, like they have school now. Yeah, but way back then, color went to color school, and white went to white school.
Who built the school?
Well, that's according to what sort of man you read and where you was at. Now, the Langdales on the Valos got this start out. The daddy built a camp 2 miles out in the woods.
Was this Judge Langdale?
Yeah, Judge Langdale's daddy.
His daddy?
His daddy, yeah. You know, he raised a bunch of people out there. He had a way to come to school, you know, right there. He had a little school right there on the jaw.
Now, we're talking 1925, and these little black children were able to go to school.
1925.
Say by the time you were 15 or 16. So we're talking 2025.
Well, you take the time when I moved down there, I didn't leave them down there until I was 22 years old.
You left Edith when you were 22 years old?
Yes.
Why did you leave?
Well, I was kind of a boy. I come up with a good stepdaddy.
Tell me about your stepdaddy.
He didn't bother you. What a black, and you didn't bother him. You know, I didn't want to say something and nothing. You know, he said something to me I didn't like.
Like what?
Just old junky kind, but he was good. You know, I didn't want to say nothing back to him. Like children do, cussing going on at the people now.
Yes, sir.
You wouldn't do my daddy like that.
Tell me about the time that man came to get you to go to work for him.
Well, the time the man come to get me work, we done all. We hadn't started Tim time and then. But this man come, a man told him this man had a big farm, and he was a kind of a demonstrator. He'd buy mules and horses and hogs and cows and things, put them in a pasture, barn thing, and fatten them and sell them. But when school come in, he didn't have but one boy was in his side, but he had 5 children, I believe. And he was talking to fill up that sunset on about 10, 12 miles from where he was at. But he had a brother that lived right there in Sunset. You know.
Where were you living at that time?
Where I was living at that time? I was living out there from Moultrie. You know where the airport is? No, the hospital is there.
I know where the hospital is in Moultrie, yes, sir.
In Moultrie?
Yes, sir.
Well, the old road, get right about where the hospital is, this road turn over and go back in there on the river. And we were living back there, the man had about a 3-mile farm. you know, somebody with the man that told this man about it told his brother he lived right there at Sunset, out on the road, big sawmill and everything right there in school.
What was his name? Do you remember?
Mm-mm. I can't remember because the sawmill had done broke up and gone when we got there. But the big pond is there, yeah. But, you know, he told his brother about it. His brother lived right there, but he lived about 12, 14 miles on further down the road, a place called Archerville. And he told this man's brother about it, and then his brother got with him and told him about it, and told him how to get down to the house and all. You had to come through a field. When you left Sunset, you hit a road, and you run on around, you go right on around that road and come back out to the highway right up there. Wasn't nothing out there then but a little tin church.
Did Tanya take you to the right place?
That's all was out there. And shoot, some of the trees would take me and you both, and you had to reach around them.
To get your hearing aid.
You know, we went on like that.
Was it the right place?
So that Sunday evening, you come out there.
I don't know. You don't remember where we went?
Drove up in front of the yard there. The road run between the barn and our house. And Mama sent to Wonderland.
Don't seem like the war,
but... Man, come over here, he and his wife. Stop. She called Daddy. Honey. Tell her there's somebody out there. So, is he out there? Yeah, he got up there and went to the door and looked out. See what it was. He walked on out there. Spoke to him. Told him, get out. Get late. He said, well, I ain't got much time. I just want to talk with you, man.
And if we can go early,
here I am.
Time for that. You think so? If we go early.
And then he told him what he heard and what he wanted and how he would be to me. Daddy, still been listening to him. He said, when I eat, he'll eat. And where I eat, he'll eat. Where my children eat, he'll eat. And where they sleep, he'll sleep. So Daddy, he didn't cook much, but he said to himself, that's too damn much for a nigga.
You have to go back every time to get something?
So,
that's what your stepdaddy said.
Yeah, to himself when this man
mm-hmm.
was talking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when he got through talking, he said, well, he said, who told you about this boy? And he told us, well, I got a brother out there at Sunset, and somebody told him, and he told me, and I come out here and see him. He said, well, I tell you what, you go ahead on back. He said, let me study over it, and come back next Sunday evening, I'll let you know just what's what. Well, when Jesus got in, went on back, he come on in the house, and Mama met him on the porch. Honey said, well, that man won't. And he used to come on the house. I tell you, one or two of us to him, a girl and a boy. So, come on in there, and he sat down and explained it just like man did to him. And he said, well, what did you tell him? I told him to come back next Sunday, and I let him know what about it. So, went on to the field that night, Monday morning, and it kind of worried me.
Why did it worry you?
Why it worried me?
Mm-hmm.
Me a child, him my daddy, and what he said is what I do. So I asked him, I said, Daddy, I said, well, how come you didn't tell him just what then? He said, well, I want to talk with you. See what you thought about it. I said, me? Said, now, if you say I'll go, and I say I ain't going, what's going to do? Said, if you don't want to go, you don't have to go. That's what I'm talking about. I said, so.
How old were you at this time? This is when you were 12.
Oh, I was around.
I went by there and told Rachel and carried her the lumber.
Oh, I was about 12, 13 years old.
All right.
Yeah, because that was kind of in the end of World War II, because World War One, I wasn't being able to know about that. Yeah.
When the man came to get you, what did your father say to him?
Well, that Friday, he called me kid all the time. He said, kid? I said, yes, sir. He said, now you done... I done told you about that, and the man will be here tomorrow. Said, what you want to do about it? I said, Daddy. He said, yeah, that ain't for me to say. He said, what is for you to say? I said, it's for you to say and me do. He said, well, that's for what I want you to say. He said, now you go if you want. If you think you can get along with them, go ahead. So I said, well, I can get along with them. And he had five children there. Had three bigger than me.
How did they treat you?
Just as good as anybody ever going to be treated.
Did your father give them any instructions about how to treat you?
Yeah.
What did he say?
He told him, he said, now let me tell you one thing. If he do something you dislike and you can't get along, don't you hit him. He said, don't you hit him. You bring him back to me and come back next week and you came back home with you. Now, he wasn't joking. If I'd have done anything he disliked and he'd have hit me, don't man, I'd kill him. Because he didn't sleep.
So then you started working on a farm.
Yeah, well, I was on the farm then.
Good gosh.
Yeah, I was on the farm then. But I went back home with him, but what it was, he traded, bought and sold mules and cows and hogs and things, goats, anything. Fatten it up, get it pulled, fatten it up, and then take it to the market and sell it. Or if you needed a horse or mule or something, go to his house, he had them. He didn't have nobody. Then when school started, see, white children always had to go to school, but black children didn't.
Did you go to school?
Yeah.
Where?
Well.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I went to school all around, everywhere we went. I went to school a little bit.
Everywhere you had a turpentine camp?
Yeah, everywhere I went on turpentine camp. Now, you didn't... They didn't compare to go to school then. You go to school if you want it, and then if the boss man was willing for you to go to school, you go to school.
Where did they get teachers from?
Well, the teachers come up just like teachers come up now.
Black teachers?
Yeah, black teachers.
So black teachers taught black children, white teachers taught white children?
Yeah, that's right. You know, then... Another thing about the white children had a good school to go to.
What was your school like?
But the poor people had just some old throat that broke down something or other. Had a school now out there, the Tonville I tell you about. That's where I done my biggest going to school. But they, we got wood. Didn't have no lights and things in school like it is now. And heaters and all that kind of junk. You heat it from a wood heater. And then the boys had to go out in the woods and cut that wood up. They'd go out and cut it long, bring it to the schoolhouse and cut it up. And then us little children would tote it in. And there'd be a two or three certain children had to be there when it's cold. Every morning early, build a fine ass big heater, warm up the school. Out there one time got Spring Hill, but my two families out there. And they both run the stove. One on this end and one on the other end.
children.
But now, you want to get in trouble?
Well, bring the wood.
You go out there and mess with one of them niggas
wood.
In.
Can you chop the wood?
Them two crackers will get together and get these crew on you.
Then you have to bring inside.
When you were in Edith working in the turpentine camp, and your stepfather was working
in the camp,
did y'all work the same area?
Yeah. We worked right alongside inside every day.
That's how you learned how to turpentine?
Yeah.
What kind of tools did you use?
You hack when it's kind of like that. That is the bill what done the cutting.
The hook bill?
The bill of the hack. But this ain't hit us about that thick when you got it. But you had to cut it down to the edge.
Really?
Round and they like that. About that forward back in, and it's about that deep. You cut it around and then get it where you could almost shave with it. You get it so sharp.
Did you walk or did you have a wagon and mules?
Well, at this time, we walked. All of them was close enough, and they had wagon and mules. They didn't have trucks. They didn't have truck like they are now.
I asked you the last time we were talking about working with the animals, with the mules.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be on the tape, but I really don't care. See, I know them white folk didn't know nothing about no G and Whoa and Backham. They didn't know that. They had to learn that from us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's where they learned all that from us. The biggest white part we all know, they got it from us. Farming or anything, they got it from us.
What was it like working with the animals, the mules? Did you give them special names?
Yeah. You give him a special name, just anything you want to name him.
My daddy told me one time he plowed a mule so long that mule broke wind. It smelled like a vanilla wafer.
When
you were working with these animals, did you get close to them? Did you get attached to them?
Yeah, I got close to some of them. You had to get close to them to put the harness on them.
No, I mean, did you get the way you... Well, you liked them. They were special to you.
Yeah. Anytime you work one thing till you get to knowing it and it gets to knowing you, you'll come to like it. Yeah. The last farming we done that year, I plowed one mule. And when I go to field, hit you up that plow that morning and start and make a round out there, my lines down. But after I made that round, I go up there and hang my lines up on the hang.
How long was it in the turpentine woods before you got to work with a mule?
Oh. I don't know, a couple of years.
Couple of years?
Yeah.
All the men that you work with, say, down there in Edith, y'all got to know each other pretty good.
You know, pretty good, got no idea. Oh, everything just about in one of them camps would come be as one.
Like family?
Yeah, just like family.
What kind of songs did you sing?
Me?
Oh, you or the rest of the men? What kind of songs did you sing?
Oh, all kinds.
Did you have a work song?
No. Church time?
Yes.
My mama was a church lady. Now, my dad, he wasn't too much of a church man to just the way he died.
But your mama went to church?
Yes, sir. My mama went to church.
Did you ever hear her sing?
Ooh. I wish I could count the dollars I heard her sing.
What kind of songs would she sing?
All the most good religious songs.
Did you sing?
Would I sing?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Strike one up for me.
Well, her favorite song, give me that old-time religion.
Can you sing it for me?
Yeah.
Hit it.
Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. That old-time religion is good enough for me. It will make you love everybody. Make you love everybody. Make you love everybody. And it's good enough for me. It was good for Paul and Silas. Good for Paul and Silas. It was good for Paul and Silas. It's good enough for me. And them old sisters get in there having to go run a hell of a revival. The sisters go in there and open up every night. Have their little prayer meeting. And then they get turned over to the brothers. Yes. There was some good times back them days, and there's some bad times. Yes, sir.
Did you ever hear your father sing?
My father? No, I never did hear Daddy do no singing unless he was playing the guitar. Now, he can make music on anything. He blew a juice horn, blow a corn, pick a guitar, and play one of these old fiddlers, juice horn fiddlers.
Yes, sir. Did you play anything?
I couldn't play with a quarter.
Oh, my. Okay, boy, I tell you, I wouldn't miss this for nothing in the world. Some water will be fine. Let me ask you, how old were you when you left Edith, and why did you leave Edith?
Well, I was 22 years old when I left Eagle. That's when I left home. I was 22 years old. You know, there's an old fella had been living there, and he left, went to Jacksonville. Well, from time to time, Hoover, first days.
Herbert Hoover, president.
Herbert Hoover, yeah, president. He come in, just cut the wages down to where a man would make for a dollar a day, and blew boys, young men, 50 cents.
How much were you making before Hoover?
With Hoover?
Before Hoover came in.
Oh, well, I was making it just as much as a man.
A dollar a day?
Well, that dollar a day wasn't in there then. See, you worked about a piece in the fall of the year. You rake pine about 100.
How much could you rake?
Me? Well, that's because of what sort of woods was in. Yeah, that's because of what sort of woods was in. You know, on like that. And who were coming there then was getting $2 a hundred to rake them pine. He cut it down to 50 cents.
That's a long way.
Yeah. If I was getting $2 and a half a thousand for chipping and pulling, he cut it down to a dollar. And I was 2 years old. Three. I jumped out gonna rent me some boxes and make me some big money.
How old were you then?
About 23?
No, I wasn't
23.
Okay. You were gonna rent you some boxes?
Yeah.
Was other black men doing that?
Yeah. You see, I had rented me about 30,000, and I hired me two men to help me work mine.
What gave you that idea?
Huh?
What gave you that idea? Where'd you get that from?
Make some money.
But how did you know to do that?
Because I'd been doing it for 3 or 4 years for the other fella. And I said I'd try to do something for myself. And then I done left home. But I went back and I talked to my daddy about it. He said, kid, that's what he called me all the time, kid. He said, kid, said that's a good idea. You can make you some money.
He must have been a very wise man in his own way.
Yeah, he's in his own way. He didn't mess with you and you didn't mess with him. Why blue bright could grow you. Y'all saw you didn't mess with him.
How much longer did you stay in Edith after that?
How much longer?
Yes, sir.
About 3 days.
Why did you leave?
Cold. I just said I wasn't gonna wait for that.
Time to go.
I had all them boxes ready to dip out. And had dipped out about half of them. And that Saturday morning was payday. And I walked in the commissary to get paid for all that. I got out of where I could pay my men's on. You know, my man Boyd, the captain, the man who run the camp, when I walked in there, he said, Nelson, I said, yes, sir. I said, you had the ladies, ain't you? I said, yes, sir. I said, well, what about it? What y'all gonna do about it? He said, well, ain't nothing you can do about it. I said, what you say? He said, ain't nothing we can do about it. He says, I said, Captain Boyd, he used to be a convict captain.
Ooh, he sounded like a mean man.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't?
Mm-mm, he was good and calm.
Now, and you called him Captain Boyd.
Captain Boyd.
He was the camp man.
He was the camp man there then, but he had been a warden on the chain gang for several years. But he see in the paper where Langdale and Poole wanted a woodsman and a camp manager. And he come and trade with them. And I said, well, Captain Boyd, I said, now them 25 bales on the flatboat, say you gonna cut for them too? He said, yeah, everything. I said, now I could see you cutting everything in the woods. But that on the platform, I don't see any where you ought to cut that. You ought to just let that go like it always been. He said, no, I can't do it. I said, well, just wait. So I started to walk out. He said, Mr. Langdale just called me and told me he's on his way up here. I said, well, I'll be waiting on him when he gets here. And there's a little store about like that house on the other side of that one right there. I walked on over to that store. Time I got to that store, which he had been renting that store, but he built some commissary to own. Mr. Langdale, the old man, now not none of them in Valos now. He drove up there and got out. When he drove up to that store, I just stepped one side down the bush. And when he got in there, he said, hey, Nelson, I said, Mr. Langdale. I said, Mr. Langdale, I want to talk to you. He says, you done been on the commissary? I said, yes, sir. He said, you want to talk to me here or go to that office? I said, I'll just wait and go to that office. So I went on over there. I explained to him like I did. He said, well, he said, Nelson, something just like you. I said, but I've got just to do like the government said. So, well, when he got through paying for that, he gave me, I had enough on the platform to pay my boys off for all the work they done. And for that, what was back in the cup in the woods. Well, then, I called them all up there to come and say, that's all right. That's a Kim Boyd, pay them boys off. Just like you're paying the rest of them off. He didn't, he paid off. Got about $3 left. She was my whole month away. And that we've got paid off once a month. And that's what I got out of them. So she went on the next morning, that Monday morning. I went up and the boy said to me, said, stick us up. Said, what you gonna do? I said, he said, what we gonna do this morning? I said, now I tell you what, y'all go over there and start where you'll start. If y'all want. I said, but I ain't doing a damn thing myself. So you ain't, you know. I said, well, what you gonna do? I said, I don't know. About 10 o'clock, I stayed out on the full end of the quarter. I come on up through the quarter walking, all dolled up like I was about ready to go to church. Met Captain Boyd, he had one of those big pacing horses going. He met me, he said, whoa. He said, Nelson, I said, yes, sir. He said, where are you going looking like that? I said, I don't know. He said, is somebody going? I said, yes, sir. He said, now I know what he said. So you going to that four-piece like you always started? I said, yes, sir. I said, there he is. He said, but I ain't hit another damn lick.
You were not afraid to talk to a white man like that?
No. He's a man like me.
Now, Mr. Stick, you had a whole lot of nerve for a black man back in them days to talk to white folks like you did. Where did you get that from?
Well, I just rolled up from there, right? Told my stepdad, see, he didn't take no foolishness. And that's where I got him already.
Did you ever become a woods rider while you were in Edith?
Edith, yeah.
You rode woods?
Yeah.
How did you come about getting that kind of job? Did nobody else look like you had that kind of job?
Well, the way that is, I tended my own business. Let the other fellas alone. And you two like that and ran out there, got two, three little things you need to be done. And he figured you could take somebody and get and do it. That's how I got my start.
Once you left Edith, wait a minute, let me back up. When you got that job as wood riders, what did the other black folks think about that?
Well, they were glad of it. Yeah.
How did you treat them?
Me? I feel like anybody else.
How did you treat those black people that you had been working with?
I treat them just like I treat a white person.
Now, when you left Edith, where did you go?
When I left Edith, I went to Jacksonville, Florida.
By yourself?
Yeah.
What did you tell your daddy?
Well, I didn't tell daddy nothing. Till I went off, I left home in February, right after my birthday. Well, this old man there had moved from Edith to Jacksonville, but he would come back there every first Sunday to church.
A black man?
A black man.
What was his name?
My man Coffee. He was a deacon of that church there at Edith. And the train made a transfer. You could catch the train in Jacksonville, come up there and be in church all day and catch the train that evening, go back to Jacksonville and be all home next morning. What a wife. You know, I run up with this old man that Sunday evening out there at Edith, you know, got talking with him, and he said, Stick, everybody called me Stick. He said, what you doing out here? I said, I'm looking for you. But I hadn't thought about that old man. He said, what you looking for me for? So I just said that because I knew you to come up today and go back this evening. We talked on a little bit. He said, you ain't looking right. I said, well, I ain't right.
What did he mean?
Just said I didn't, wasn't looking right. He's representing and I was fixing to leave home. He said, he walked over to the and he come and said, stick us, yes, sir. Said, where you going? I said, well, I ain't got no certain place. I just thought I'd go. He said, well, I thought I'd run down Jacksonville and see if I could find me a job. He said, yeah. And he just moved down there and been down there about 3 months. He said, when you going? I said, figured on catching this train tonight. He said, don't catch that tonight. So we catch it in the morning. I said, in the morning's here. He said, now listen to me good. Say, you got a place to stay when you get there. I said, well, I don't know nobody down there. Sure, you know my family and me. I said, I don't know where you live. He said, you listen to me good now. You going on the train. I said, yes, sir. Say, you get off the train, you'll be way out in the yard. So you may have a quarter of a mile to walk to the gate to go out on the streets. Say, well, if you be lucky enough to catch one of them closed tracks, say, when you get off, you will follow everybody. And when you go in that gate and going up, you're going to a big shed out there. So then you meet some blue caps and red caps and all different kinds of people.
What are blue caps and red caps? People that worked at the train station?
Yeah, these were the train station.
These black men?
Yeah. These was the blue cap was porters inside the train station. Them red cap was taxi cabs. Say, when you get in there, come a blue cap to your red cap room. Say, if a blue cap here ask you, can he help you? And you tell him just then what you want, how you want. Sure enough, when I got out there in the union shed, when he come over up there and I told him where I was going, he said, follow me. We walked on out on the streets and cab passed by and he waved and the guy run on down there and come on back. We run on back in the shed. He come on there and he knew him. He said, can I help you? And then this guy told him, he said, well, he said, I ain't never been there, but I think I know right where you want to go. He said, come on.
How come you didn't tell your daddy?
Because I was leaving home. And I didn't want daddy to know it.
When you got to Jacksonville, what kind of work was your friend down there doing?
Oh, just some of the most any kind of work there was when I got first got there that morning. And that guy carried me around there where I told him. He said, I ain't never been here before, but I knew about where the place is. He went on down there on Oak Street, called Oak Street, down to Cleveland. Got to Cleveland and turned it, went up one block, turned back on a street called Ashley, and he stopped the corner house. It is a double pin house. So go right up them stairs right there. You get up there on the porch, knock on that door to the left. And I think that's where you'd be looking. And them children, this old man had a bunch of children. And they looked downstairs from upstairs. And say, you're on a stick. And they all come piling out on that porch then. And I walked back to the edge of the seat down. I said, this the place. And he charged me 50 cents.
How much money did you have in your pocket when you left home?
I don't know just exactly now. $2 or $3.
Was that a lot of money back then?
Yeah. So that day then Mr. Coffey come in. That was the man of the house. And he had a daughter down there married. Then I knew another man was down there married. And they all stayed and calling this one another right in that block. So that evening, this old man what told me what to do when I got there. His son-in-law come up there. Yeah. He had three missing girls down the house there.
He had three what?
This old man had three missing girls in his house. His
own little bitty girls?
No. Missing girls was called girls of don't take company and marry them.
Code inside.
Yeah.
Single. Oh. Okay. That, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He
had
in.
Three of them.
Yeah.
And they called them Missy girls.
Yeah.
And these were young ladies who could court and have company.
Yeah. You know, he had two down there already done married. And one of the son-in-law come up there. I was sitting down in the room there playing pool. And one of the girls was there with. She come in and she told him, said, Dawson, I bet I got a surprise for you. He said, what? So, you want to see it? He said, hell yeah. So she walked on back to the little shared room and saw herself sitting around there playing pool. And he looked over there and he said, well, I mean, goddamn. I said, stick. I said, yeah. So what you doing down here? I said, what you doing down here? He said, I stay down here. I said, that's what I'm thinking on doing. And we cut up on him. He said, well, you got your job? I said, no. And he lived about three houses right down the same street I went. He said, well, I tell you what, you get up, come by my house about 5:30 in the morning. Saying I carry by a place you probably can get a job there now, but if you do, it won't be a long job. And I said, all right, and I went on, and we got to where this job was. The man that hired for that company hadn't got made there. And he was working just over on the other side of the streets facing them. He said, when he got any smith around there, he said, stick. I said, yeah. I said, you see that door right away on? I said, yeah. I said, now, if you come in and you ain't got no room for you, come over there. I said, we may put you up for the balance this week. I said, all right. And when this guy come in, I was the man he was looking for. He needed a man. And I worked the balance that week with him.
What kind of work were you doing?
Well, then, we was unloading what they call boring meal and surfing. We'd come in from upstate on them ships and be loaded off on them docks and things and sent to different places and line one junk another.
How long did you stay in Jacksonville?
How long? Well, when I first went there, I went there in February. I didn't hear from nobody that I got there till around about nearly Easter Sunday. But I didn't work someplace. I worked one of them 3 days, one day. And then they come one of them big ships loaded with that boring meal and cottonseed meal and all different stuff. And there's had a nigga over about 10 or 15 room. And some people, you know, try to be imposing. And I worked there one day. And the next day that nigga coming in, he talked to them people like he's talking to a dog.
This black man talking to a black folks?
Yeah. And I didn't like it, but it didn't say nothing. And when he kicked, I knew. I threw my shield down. He said, where the hell are you going? Going home, that's where I'm going. I said, what's the matter? I said, let me tell you one thing. Say, nigga, don't you put your damn foot on me. And don't you cuss me. So I'm gonna do your way, and that's all. He looked at me. He said, you don't know who you talking to. I just went back there and got my shovel. Went walking on the water with his old man there. It knowed me. He called me, said, Stick, I said, sir. Said, come here. Said, come here. This old man, he was an old man. But I knew him before I went to Jacksonville, but I didn't know I was one of them. He said, put that shovel down. Go on to the office. Said, tell the man what's the matter. Said, we've been wanting somebody like this. So I threw the shovel down and went to the office. And by the time I got to the office, that nigga was there. And he wanted to know what was the matter. Hmm. And I told him just what was the matter and what he done. I said, him or nobody else don't kick me or cuss me. Said, I want my money, I'm gone. He said, well, he said, preacher. I said, yes, sir. He said, I ain't got no money now. I said, but I tell you what, I've been here and this is happening, but nobody had the nerve to come up and do like you doing. I said, I've done it my last time, my first and last time. Because if he put his foot on me, I'll kill him. Because I ain't cuss him and I ain't gonna kick him. So I walked on off to that night. The cover fell to a good dog. He come by the house and bought me money. So another fella said, I'll tell you what to do. Say, come go with me in my night and get you a
job. I thought you were going to clean the kitchen.
And I lived in Jacksonville. See, Jacksonville then was Jacksonville and South Jacksonville. So, I hear tell them that the bridge rising.
I don't think
it'll bother the trussle. And I've been there about a month. I didn't see it. So, eventually, coming up Easter Sunday, I wanted to come home and see Mama. I hadn't heard from Mama and hadn't seen her in 3 months. That's as long as I'd ever done without seeing my Mama and Daddy. So we had to get all sorts of stuff from up the state that it have to come down on ship. And when it get to Jacksonville and these big places like that, to be unloading on car boxes and train and ship to other places. But if it unloaded in Jacksonville, carried on a little tugboat to call it, over to South Jacksonville. That Friday evening before Easter Sunday, and we had two boss men on it. Had one, we worked 15 head in my group over there. And we about caught up for that week. He come around there, and I says, he said, all right, boys, the rack on the stack wings over the hill. I said, yeah. And my boss man looks around at me and said, Georgia boy? Yes, sir. Sir, run the recoupling, put in the jail back on and get over the hill. I said, yes, sir. He said, I'm sure glad of one thing. He said, what's that? He said, I caught two of you together tonight, this evening. He said, what's the matter? I said, I've been here 3 months now. Ain't missed a day or hour. I meet all the time, come anytime y'all call me. He said, I ain't never done what I've seen my mama this long. He said, I want to go home for Easter. He looked at one another and said, where you live? I told him, sir, well, when will you be back? So I'll be back town to school to work Monday morning.
When did you go back to Turpentine after that?
When I went back to Tim Thomas?
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't know, just stay with it at the time. And I went back down there, and I stayed 3 more months, and I left and come back home. But I didn't Tim Thomas none right then. I left there and went up here. Well, when I left there, and I went back home just around there a week, I left there with a pocket knife and a dime in my pocket. Tuesday morning, Monday morning, Tuesday morning, I woke up in Atlanta, Georgia, with a pocket knife and a dime in my pocket.
How'd you get there?
Caught a ride. Caught a truck or a sign truck. And they all down in Florida, they'll put up these signs, road signs and things. You know, I caught a truck about 25 miles out in the woods and went to a little place over there they called on. In Florida, there, right there on the Georgia and Florida line.
Jasper?
Huh?
Jasper?
No, just side of Jasper.
Nemo?
Huh?
Jennings?
Jennings. That's right, Jennings. But I caught this place from a truck right there between, what you call them? Going on down the Fargo from Valosa,
that's my Lake
down 94. But anyhow, I got there and called a fellow cop, wanted me to, I got out on the road, he wanted me to drive a truck. The guy had bought a truck from a man, Jenny, and he was going down to Chief on Florida on the Orange Grove. And he hadn't paid him from that truck and he hadn't notified him. And he sees me come walking down the road. And he stood there and I got right at him. I said, preacher, I said, yes, so which way are you going? I said, I don't know the Hollywood Grill I'm going for a done with. He said, can you drive a truck? I said, yeah. He said,
how did you learn how to drive a truck?
Me?
Yes, sir.
Shoot, I was driving a truck for that. I drove a truck. The boss man. In Jasper, Florida. He had a big camp there. The people that you got your first message from, Wellingtons?
Yes, sir.
I drive a truck from there.
They had a Turpentine camp?
Yeah.
So when you left Jacksonville, did you go to work for the Worthington then?
No. I went on.
That's when you started driving trucks?
No, I've been all over nearly the world before I started driving trucks. When I left there, I went to the last little stop in Georgia, just side of Birmingham, Alabama. I called a boy, his home was up there, this little place, Donaldson. I believe it was Donaldson. But anyhow, he was there, had caught this truck down in Florida and made it to Jenny, and that truck broke down. And they couldn't finish it there, but they called him and told him to send him on in, and he could finish. He didn't have the piece that he needed. He said, well, he won't crank. He said, you ain't got nothing to pull it. He said, no. He said, well, I tell you what. Says, near our time to close, but I'm gonna send a truck down there after this truck. Saying he gets you inside me and patch it up. Where they headed for, said Atlanta. He said, we make him patch it up by 9 o'clock and he can make it in. And this boy walked in and said, look like you traveling to us a year. And me and him caught that truck and come on into Valosa. We got into Valosa. He hadn't eaten nothing all day and I hadn't eaten nothing either. We stopped at a Dodge place right at Munich here. We went on, we got off the truck here. He said, where you going? Someone going over here, and he said, Diffo. And them noodles raised and stuff. Just having all kinds of fun in there.
And what was the name of the place?
Val Dosta.
And the name of the place you went to?
When I left Val Dosta.
When you got to Val Dosta, where did you go to?
When I left Val Dosta.
When you got here, where did you go to get something to eat?
Something to eat? That's what I'm thinking today. Now what I... And we stood around and asked, you hungry? He said, yeah, I'd like to have something to eat. That's what come go with me, but I know a lot of people around Valdosta there. And we walked down the street about a block and cut across there and walked past about three houses and walked one door and knocked. The lady said, who knocked? I said, that ain't what you want to know. She said, oh God, that stick. She knew my voice. Huh? She come and opened the door and two guys sitting up there and well, her and her husband had party. And we talking around there a little bit. She said, stick, what you done now? I said, I ain't done nothing. She said, well, who messed with you? I said, nobody. She said, well, where you going? I said, ain't no telling. She said, well, have you done eat supper? I said, no. She said, that's what I'm hunting, something to eat. She said, well, just give me a few minutes. And this guy was sitting over there. I said, no, I didn't come here to bust up your company. He said, no. He said, you ain't busting up your company. I got to go home. He said, well, you stick, ain't you? I said, yeah, that's stick. She said, I hear a lot of talk of you.
What was that lady's name? Do you remember?
Yeah. Geneva Space, we all call her Sugar. So, she went on there and fixed a nice supper. We went on there and eat and everything. She said, well, stick, y'all gonna stay all night? No, you know I don't stay all night. She said, well, you know I ain't married. I ain't got no boyfriend. I said, I ain't looking for no boyfriend, either, no boyfriend. She said, you always was crazy. So where you headed now? She said, well, I'm headed for Atlanta now, and I don't know where else. Son of a Wednesday morning, I was walking out on East 4th Street in Atlanta, Georgia.
What did you do when you got to Atlanta?
Well, the boy I was with had a cousin there. We went there and eat breakfast. And from Atlanta to College Park out there was 2 miles. Where all them big colleges is?
Yes, sir.
It was 2 miles from no college to Atlanta.
What year is this now?
Hmm?
What year is this?
What year? That is in 23 or 24. I was 22 years old.
So you're up around the college area?
Well, I didn't mess around the college. When his cousin got breakfast ready and we eat breakfast, she said, y'all gonna be here when I come in? He said, no. He said, I'm going on home. He said, you better go home. Say, you running mama crazy. So that was his mom. And he lived in the last stop in Georgia before we get to Birmingham. So we went on then. We got 10 o'clock that next morning when we left that little place down there on the Jordan Flood Line. When we left there, 10 o'clock the next morning, we was walking around right on the line of Georgia and Alabama. So we went in there and he and his people hadn't seen or heard from him in 2 years. That's the reason we to go by there. So, when me and him got to talking, they asked me that. That is when Ford first started building cars. And he had a big ad out in the paper about it. You didn't have to have no fine education, just work. And so that's where I left Edith going there by myself.
They brought your nose
too? So we went on and we got off that his house. Went to that town, went around to this woman in my house.
They owned the home,
the Nye's home.
Mr. George, did they bring them?
And we sat around there, he said, now this is where we live, but all the children's in school and mama working. And he said, come on, I tell you what, let's do us what's that. He said, let's walk down here to the cafe. We walked on down there, big cafe, and he walked in there. I walked in behind him, but I noticed everybody looked like Struck Silas when he walked in. You know, said to myself, now what the hell happened now? So he said, fellas running the cafe was one of his uncles. He turned around and he looked and said, well, love you, goddamn. So nigga, come on in here with you. We were walking in. I said, who that with you? He said, a friend of mine. They didn't sell liquor in that county. But about 11 miles from there to the county line, they had a big bar room just across the county line. Well, another one was worse. Let's go get some whiskey. I know you want something to drink. He rolled up there and come back with 2 fifths.
What were you drinking?
What was I drinking?
Yes.
Anything that makes you kind of drunk. But I never was no drunkard.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I got enough. So we come on back and he see all wants to tell us, I said, I don't. About 1 o'clock he fell, I tell you. Said, let's ease on back around the morning. We went back to the house, 3 big knives rocking chair on the floor. He said, now, stick? I said, yeah. He said, I want you to be sitting in that chair right there when mama come in. He said, don't say a word. I'm gonna be sitting back over here. And I was sitting there, she got out of the car and later rolled home. She's got out. Turned right around over the gate and was walking. She got right at the step and looked up and seen me. She stopped and stood there for 3 or 4 minutes looking so hard at me. And she looked back over there. He said, I don't care what she says, don't you say a word. So she said, who you are? That ain't what you want to know. She said, nigga, what you said? I said, ain't what you gonna know. And she had him look up there and she said, well, she said, my God, she throwed everything she had. And she got through talking around her. She turned around and looked at me and said, now, you know what I wanna do?
No,
I said, yes, ma'am. I know exactly what you wanna do. And I know what you gonna do. She said, what's that? You gonna pick up all your stuff and carry in the kitchen and in the house. And she said,
where did you go to from Atlanta?
From Atlanta?
Did you have to clean?
I stayed down there 2 weeks. There was 10 cotton mills there. All of them running.
That's what you all.
But you couldn't get a job.
Uh-huh. That was what you cooked.
So what you, did you go back to Turpentine?
No.
That was what you cooked the other day.
I didn't tell him time to move in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Where did you start Turpentine?
About a month.
Yeah,
but
I,
when I went back to Turpentine, I went back to a little place up here above Tifton. I come back down there, but I got a good job.
Who were you working for up there?
That wasn't yesterday?
Up there?
In the Turpentine.
Oh.
Yeah. I rang it
walk.
Was that Mr. Paul?
No, there wasn't none of them people there. This old man, he lived there in Ashburn. You know, but anyhow, I got me a job. Them girls got the brother job, which I know that was common for them to do that. And they told me, they begged me, they don't leave. We'll get you a job. He had three married sisters there, and all three of them had a job. And they two of them wasn't working to the same mill. So I didn't stay with neither one of them two nights. And them three married sisters. Stayed with us in the night. I'm going to stay with that never there tomorrow night. I stayed around there 2 weeks. I said, shoot, I ain't used no word taking care of me like this. Then I spent the night with that damn hunter over there. Mr. Nelson said, don't go nowhere. We got your job coming. I said, I ain't going nowhere. He darkened the door I did. Walked about a mile down the highway in the filling station. You know.
She said something about
his. I walked on down to that filling station. He pumped your gas back on then. It wasn't lecture.
Why don't you go?
I won't finish it. This man come out, pump the fellas some gas, and it didn't figure it up. You had to do that. So, he got through his gas running in, got the man's chain to come back out, and he started back in. I said, good morning, it's a good one. I said, mister, he said, yeah. So you don't mind a fella standing around here trying to catch him a ride back to Atlanta, do you? He said, no, just help yourself. So you may get it to ride in a few minutes. And his old man back in there then talked with the man and wanted a hand. So he went on back in there. People come up out there, I'd pump gas, but I'm not going to tell how much I pumped, then you'd have to figure up where it comes from. And he told those old man while he's sitting back in there talking. He said, you know, Mr. Charlie says, I believe the man you're looking for is out there now.
What kind of business was this man in?
What? He told his bleed man in liquor.
Yeah.
He was a man, he was a demonstrator.
Okay.
Buy cows and horses and anything like that.
And that's what you did in Ashburn?
No.
You turpentined again in Ashburn?
No. Well, see, it's about 3 or 4 weeks before I came time anymore. But this old man come out. He says, good morning. I said, good morning. He said, well, I'm going down the road to a little piece about 2 miles. He said, then I'm going to turn off. I said, but every little bit of help. I told him, yeah. He said, you can ride that far with me. You know, he got just a little few off down the road. And he asked me where I was from, and I told him, say, you got a job? I said, no, sir. Say, you want a good job? I said, well, that's according to what it's doing, according to who it is and where it's at. He said, well, I got there where I was waiting. He said, now I turn off right away. He said, that car come out on us here, sir. I turn off, and it's about 2 miles in there to where I live. And I live in a little place called Roscoe. See, I tell you what, see what you been making. I said, well, I've been getting $7.50 a week straight time. He said, what you been doing? Now, what can you do? I said, well, I've been 10 times like I'm here. I said, but I can do anything. The crowd looks around at me. Drove on through a little old town. There's 3 or 4 stores. He lived just going out of town. And they go off the streets. They go up in his yard. It's about 4 steps high. Shoot. But he went all around and come in the back there. He said, now I tell you, me out there, he said, I give $7.50 a week straight time, place to sleep and eat.
What kind of work were you doing?
Sitting down. Walking. So he said, I hear what you have to do. You hear him say he was a demonstrator?
Why don't you go?
He go around and buy hogs and cows and mules and goats, anything is in a poor bad shape, bring it out there and keep it fatten it up and carry it and sell it back to the market. You know, he said, all I want you to do, milk that cow yonder, feed them two mules. So you see all them racks out your nephew? So I want you to keep them full of food and them trolls. So when I eat, you eat. When I eat, you eat the table, I eat them. He had three children. His oldest one was a boy, and he was going to college in Macon. And he had two girls at home. One 15,
you wanna sit right here?
One 13.
You want to sit right here?
Nice little house there. You know, some white folks used to make them a little house for the maid to stay in. And that right there is about the four from the back gate going in the yard from here, that door. And he said, now that'll be your house right there. Said, nobody bothers me.
How long did you stay there?
Huh. A month.
Why'd you leave?
Why'd I leave? Because them crackers were going to kill me.
Why?
Why? Back long then, niggas didn't talk for a while, man. And the old lady, every Saturday morning, I'd have to carry her to town and get groceries and things. I was her chauffeur. Saturday evenings and things, I won't go back to town to shore. Them two gals, they're going. You know, I did want me to go with them. Well, I went with them.
What was their name?
Hmm?
What was their family name?
What was their family?
What was their family name?
Oh, Charlie Hedge was the old man's name. I can't think of the gal's name.
Hedge.
And Silver, the old lady. You know. Every Saturday morning, though, he left there, he wrote my check. Put it under my plate on that dinner table. So, one day I figured on leaving, don't get out of it. But what made me get leave there, them gals have gotten too loving with me. Every Saturday. And them old cracker men, they were back to a drugstore one day. There were three Coca-Colas. And the man come out, he didn't come out and bring but two. Well, the oldest girl was driving, you know. She looked at the little tree and says, oh, Mr. Nelson? No, she said to this guy, see, you ain't got but two corners up here. I said three. We don't give a damn nigga nothing over the tree here. You have to go to the back. She said, what you say? And he repeated it. She said, take your tree. I ordered three. And he wouldn't do it, and she pulled off him. Like the broke that tore that man's trail.
Yeah.
And then they got looking at me when I come in there with the old lady Saturday morning to make Grossman back Saturday evening. Like I was some good deed.
Where did you go when you left there?
Where I left there? I left there, come back to Atlanta, caught me a truck and come to a little place down there between Atlanta and Macon. And I went there, waited late, and started waiting to a filling station for an old man. I always had good luck for getting me a good job. You know, this old man, he had three girls and two boys. And they was just like them girls up there, just too friendly with colored men. So I can't stay here.
And where did you go?
Huh?
Where did you go?
Where did I go?
Yes, sir.
I caught the late train that night and come into Macon. You know, that along when it's picking up people for vehicles, you know, and put them in jail.
Why didn't you just go back to the turpentine camp?
I did.
When? Where were you?
Where was it? Well, I'm going to tell you how I went back to Tim-Tom camp. I come in to make them, you know, just bad by picking up them for vacus.
If you didn't have any money, you couldn't just be hanging around on the corner.
If you have much money you want to. I had money in my pocket.
They still pick you up?
No, they didn't pick me up. I picked myself up. When I got into Macon that night, on that 1 o'clock train, I was told not to go out on the streets. So that's the very place I want to go.
Who told you not to go out on the street?
Some fellas up there where I leave them coming down to me. Said them police is they bad, and they pick you up for vacancy, and you have to work a week or two for nothing. I said, that's all right. I got on that train, come on in and come out on the streets, and looked around and said, I believe I don't go that way. I knew if I got out on the streets, some of them police or something would soon pick you up. I didn't walk a block. You ride three great big, all three of them. Well, now small is really larger. Two of them was larger, and one was right to your side. You know, I'd walk him down the streets, and he'd pull up side of him. Say, hey, preacher. Hey, yes, sir.
He's a white man.
Yeah, three cops. Say, come here. I walk right on up to the car. He said, where are you going? I said, I don't know. Say, that's reading about you on the streets. I want to know where the color section is in town. I said, I'm just getting in here. He said, where are you from? I told him. He said, you had a job? I said, yes, sir. Says, I just said, it's my first time ever being here, and I don't know which way the color section is, and I know if I get out here, some of you would pick me up. Carry me where I wanted, show me where to get where I wanted. Yeah. Great big one sitting over there in the back. He said, where are you from? I was right now. Well, I can't think of the name of the little place, now I'm from there. He said, where are you home? I said, well, now, my home is out 6 miles from Thomasville, a settlement out there called Spring Hill. See, that's where I was born, eh? Mm-hmm. And that's not where I call home. There's a little place called Fallville between Valdosta and Jacksonville.
Did they put you in jail?
No, they didn't put me in jail. He talked on around there, and he said, well, how long you been off the chain? I said, 22 years. You can look at one another. They talked on there, Jan, and says, oh, he had no red right next to on the drive, you know, passenger side. He like, he said, nigga said, you from say you from Thomasville? I said, yeah. That's what I said. He says, well, who's the sheriff in Thomasville? I said, well, now, I can't tell you now. Mm-hmm. Because I've been living there a long time. But I can tell you who's the sheriff when I was there. I said, who? Sanitary and Rayburg. There's a fellow sitting in the back seat. We're from down there, too. You know, every time I saw something, kind of funny to him, he just hollering leg. So he says, so let me see. She put a pretty shake down, let me see. Turn around. Used to beat conviction so bad. I put around and look. I said, what, you want to see where they beat me?
You didn't have any scars?
No.
How long did you stay down there?
How long did I stay there? Till the next morning.
Where did you go?
I come back to a little place up here. They call Ashburn. But where I stopped and started work at is a little place, his name was. But he says, how did you get around? I said, well, didn't have no car like your girl. So they use what they call a Surrey. Two big blaze face mouths hooked to a buggy with a tongue in it. You know, that's how they get. So, well, how did the rest of people? I said, when they wrestling, they had to fix where they could face them to that top there. He couldn't get away. That guy in fact is dying laughing. So he's doing it on the stone. We turn around. He said, now that's your country down there. So what, is he right? He said, yeah. So everything he's told me right, it I knew of. Said, but I'm like him, I don't know who the sheriff is now. I don't know who the sheriff is now. I said, well, and where he said his mom is, so I never been there. But I heard a lot of talk of it, saying that's a damn bad place.
The settlement?
That's what the police said.
Was it a bad place?
Yeah.
What made it so bad?
People. White and black down there didn't kill them about them. Yeah.
You left Ashburn, and then where did you go?
When I left them, they told me, say, one of them, next thing you want to know, let me pull up my britches leg. I said, you want to see where the shackles on me?
Had you ever worn shackles?
No.
Never in your life?
Never in my life. So, I said, oh, you want to see the square to beat him with the stripe? Yes. He said something. He said, but anyhow, he said, how in the hell you said you ain't never been on the chain gang? You ain't. I said, you don't have shackles on there unless you've been on the chain gang. Next thing you want me to do is pull out my shirt. Oh, let me see. You want to see where it beat you? Beat me in the strike? Yes. You all say, yeah. I went like I was going to strip. One right there, I said, hell, we didn't tell you to strip, so well, I thought I wanted to see you. You want to see where all them stripes were? He said, well, how you get stripes on you? I said, because I ain't never been on chain gang. I never been arrested in my life.
How did you leave there the next morning?
How did I leave there? They said, one is driving. I said, nigga, I said, yeah. He said, do you know what a block is? I said, I don't know. What is a block? From that corner right there to the next one? He said, yeah. Say, you walk straight down the street. You get to the next corner. You turn and go to the next corner and make a left. And time you make that left, you right there at the city hall. Go in there and tell the sergeant, I said, you first stay tonight. And I did. By the sun up.
Where did they let you stay?
Huh?
Where did you stay?
In the city hall. I didn't even see the sergeant that night. I went in and got up in the, you know how to sit around when they're having cold. And I called him. And he said, who are you? And I told him, I said, the chief told me to come by here and tell you to give me a place to stay tonight, the balance of the night. He said, is there fire in there? I said, no, sir. He said, do you see a coal can in there? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, you take that can and go back out the front door, like you come in, make a left, and you'll see a bin around there. Go around there and fill it up with coal and come back and pour it in that heater and turn that damp on there. Saying if you don't catch up with a quick cold, you know, I'll come in and light it for you.
And this is in what city?
In Macon.
In Macon, Georgia.
Mm-hmm. So
I tell you what, Mr. Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 9:30.
Uh-huh.
We're gonna stop.
Mm-hmm.
And if it be all right, Miss Bertha, can I come back Monday?
Can you? Can you come back Monday?
Be back Monday.
Can he come Monday?